Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Well, it's batter up for Major League Baseball. The 2015 season kicked off last Sunday night in Chicago. Most teams have now played at least three games. What is it about baseball that some people find so enchanting? What are the prospects for the Red Sox and the Yankees this year? What other teams have taken steps to improve their chances? Are plans to speed up the game a good idea or a bad idea? And what's being done to bring Major League Baseball back to Montreal? These are some of the questions we have for our special panel today. We have Aaron Cofield, who is sports director at Fox 44 News, Burlington Representative Kurt Wright, and VPR's Mitch Wortlieb. I'd like to welcome you all to the program.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks for having us, Bob.
Thanks for having us.
You can join the conversation here at Vermont Edition. You can give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. If you're a fan, what is it about baseball that you enjoy so much? What do you think about these efforts to speed the game up? People are talking about a pitching clock. Did your team make some good moves in the offseason? Are you excited about the possibility of baseball returning to Montreal sometime in the future? And what should baseball do with players who have used performance-enhancing drugs? Should they be eligible for the Hall of Fame? What are your thoughts? 1-800-639-2211. You can always send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net or give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. Well, some people think that baseball might be one of the dullest sports around. Many games last more than 3 hours. The amount of time when action is actually taking place is probably between 10 and 15 minutes. Now, for our panel, all three of you are big baseball fans. You thoroughly enjoy the game. So tell us, what is it about baseball that you find so interesting? Aaron?
What you're talking about right now, how they say that it's too slow, and that's definitely most people who tell me they're not a baseball fan, that's their number one complaint. But for me, there's just something about it when, you know, you're patiently maybe waiting for something to happen, and then there's that amazing catch or that, you know, that home run that just goes way farther than anyone ever would dream for it to go. And there's just those moments of things that happen. And there's, you know, maybe using that time to think about what you would do in that situation. And I like it the most for the big plays, though, and just the way people get into it. Some people do argue it's slow. Some people argue the season's too long. But I'll take baseball any day over the other sports.
Kurt, what do you think?
Well, I love baseball, and I can't. Each spring, when we start to get around late January even, I start thinking spring training camps open in 2 more weeks or whatever it is, and it signals the beginning of spring. But there just is something about baseball. And frankly, I don't look at it the same way as saying, oh, gosh, the games go 3 hours. Or three. I'm not looking for, like, I can't wait till the game gets over, so I hope it ends in 2 hours. If it's a good, I mean, there are some games that are less interesting than others. But if you give me a great pitcher's duel, as a big baseball fan, I can watch a good pitching duel. There's a lot of intricacies to the game that even when it's not the great big play every minute, that I still find fascinating. What the pitcher's going to throw next? Has he got the batter set up for a curveball, looking for a fastball or whatever it might be? Baseball's been around forever, and while there's been some changes to the game, I think the game has survived and is intact mostly the same way as it always has been. It's a great game, and to me, it's still the best.
Mitch, what do you think? You know, I don't understand the idea about baseball being too slow, because to me, there's always something going on the field. And you take an example of like an at-bat where somebody keeps fouling off that 3-2 pitch, you know, keeps going to the stands over and over again. I can understand, I guess, on the surface of it, how that looks repetitive and boring. But what I'm looking at is, this is amazing. This batter and this pitcher are in this duel, and no one's giving in. Who's going to blink first? That bat is getting around on a fastball that's 90-plus miles an hour, just getting a piece of it. what, like Kurt said, what's he going to throw next? Is he going to go to the curveball? It becomes like a chess game a little bit, and yet there's the action involved in it. So to me, there's always something compelling to watch on the field, the positioning of the players. And as Aaron said, when that ball does get put in play and you see a shortstop range far to his left, make an incredibly acrobatic play, hop and throw, and just nip that runner by a half a step – That's a combination of ballet and baseball and excitement all wrapped into one. I just find it fascinating. So I think the game is great.
Today in the program, it's our annual baseball show. What are your thoughts about baseball? Are you a baseball fan? We'd like to know why, who you root for, your thoughts about speeding up the game. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. 2211. Let's talk to Josh in Richmond. Hey, Josh, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Talking about slowing down the game, or speeding the game up, rather, I had a suggestion that would try to minimize the number of pitching changes that takes place during an inning, because, you know, by the time a manager makes three or four changes and the other manager makes three or four changes during an inning, it probably adds half an hour to the game. So what I would suggest is that we change the rules of baseball so that if a pitcher is brought in during an inning, not between innings, but during an inning, he has to remain in the game until one of the following things happen. Either two runs are scored by either new runners or inherited runners, two batters reach base safely, not on a fielder's choice or sacrifice, two outs are recorded, the pitcher's injured, or the inning ends. And that would also make pitching changes more strategic rather than tactical. And it might even help the batters a little bit because they wouldn't be facing a specialist all the time. So that's my suggestion, and I'd love to hear what your guests have to say about it.
All right. Kurt, what do you think of this idea?
Sorry. Nope. I appreciate the suggestion. For me, too complicated. And I think that the pitching changes need to stay about as they are. I think you got to leave it to a manager to decide when's the appropriate time. I think there are a lot of strategic reasons already that go into taking a pitcher out or who you're going to in the bullpen. I think that would just overcomplicate things way too much.
I do take issue, though, with one point that the caller made, and that's about how, and it does bother me a little bit, this idea that in recent years, a pitcher is brought in for one batter. You know, they'll come in a lefty to face a lefty. They'll maybe do, you know, one batter, then you bring the next pitcher in. I do believe that's part of the game. I don't really think you can change it. I just think that the old school baseball players and managers, I'm sure, look upon that and say, you know, we had a guy who got there through 120 pitches and, you know, we didn't put him on a pitch count. And those games were more earned, those wins for those pitchers. But I do think it's part of the game, and strategy is part of it now. It's a statistical game, always has been. And sometimes you got to bring in a lefty to face a lefty.
I think that if we're trying to, you know, shore up the games, I don't think changing the strategy of the pitchers is where you look. I think, you know, the batters, and often it's, you know, that batter that takes forever to get up into the batter's box. And it's something that, you know, they fight on all levels of baseball. And I saw recently that in several minor league ballparks this year, they're putting in a pitch clock. And so I'd be curious to see how that works in just moving forward, if it's something that the players really take issue with or not. I'm pretty sure, I might be wrong, that they started doing that on the college level in recent years, and I haven't seen very much backlash or people complaining about it.
Well, you know, they do have some statistics, only three games now, but just the batter staying in the batter's box rule, this new thing, they've found that over the first three games of this season as compared to the first three games of last season, they've shaved 11 minutes off the total time of a game. Now, that doesn't seem like a whole lot, but it's kind of funny. You see, like, Adrian Beltre of the Texas Rangers recently, after a pitch, he stepped out of the batter's box, and then he realized what was happening. He jumped back in like a little kid who was, you know, told, you got to stay in line there in school. So the batters are getting used to it, but I do think that's a decent thing to do. Keep the batter's foot in the batter box. It's funny, though, because you don't have to stay in the batter's box if you've swung on the previous pitch. Only if you haven't swung, then you stay in. But apparently it's having an effect on the game, at least so far, in a small sample size.
Mitch, I'm glad you mentioned that. I was watching the Red Sox game last night, and if there's any player on the Red Sox who really takes a long time at bat, it's David Ortiz.
Yep.
And except for when he fouled a ball off, he stayed in the batter's box, and he has this routine where he spits into his gloves and he readjusts the gloves and he does probably 10 other things. He did not do that last night except when he hit foul balls. And so your point is well taken.
Yeah, and he's not off to a great start. So I'd like to see him go back to his old slow ways, personally.
Well, I think for a lot of them, it's just become habit, too. I mean, how long has Big Poppy been playing baseball the way that he's been playing baseball?
Let's turn to John in Putney. Hi, John. What's on your mind today?
Well, I coach. I work at Landmark College. It's a very small school and very tough to find other colleges. And we actually play against the Connecticut River Valley Baseball League, which is a men's league that's 25 and older. And I would argue that the pace of the game is exactly what draws people to it, that this talk about them being too long is media-driven, that a lot of things being said on talk radio, sports talk, and on ESPN and other stations is kind of counter to what the stats say. More people are going to games. Minor league is more popular. I see more games now with guys playing, and the pace is a lot slower. And that's not to say that something happened, but I love the game for the pace. I love the nuances, and I think that we have so many fast sports that it is the alternative and that it does draw people to it. I've got 21 guys trying out for a baseball team here at a school of 500, and that's a huge number for us. And every year we're averaging around the same, and it's diverse with different cultures and international and different minorities. And I think that the game is great, a little there, but some of the big changes I think will damage the game. And just real quick, I'd like to say hi to Kurt because we used to work together at Carrie's Quick Stop around 30 years ago.
All right, John, thanks for your phone call.
Hey, John.
Let's turn to Will in Hinesburg. Hey, Will, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi. I am a huge baseball fan, and I just want to point out two what I think are special things about it. First of all, there's something magical about 90 feet. How many plays, how many routine plays at first base or any base are bang, bang? And I don't know, you know, how they designed it, but to me that's just magical. It's every play is a close play. And the second thing is about the time of the game. You know, it's the only game without a clock. A game could go on forever, in theory. And I love that because our lives are run by clocks, you know, productivity, time in, time out. Baseball, you sign up for a game and you put everything else on hold and you just sit back and enjoy the game. So the length of a game, to me, the fact that it doesn't have a clock is a really special part of it.
Will, thanks very much for your phone call. Today is the annual baseball show. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. Well, let's take a look at your teams, how you think your team did in the offseason, what the prospects are for 2015. Mitch, let's start with you. The Red Sox have certainly been on a roller coaster the last few years. Bad year in 2012, then they were world champions in 2013, finished last again in 2014. So what's the outlook for this year?
Well, worst to first to worst to, it's got to be first, right? I mean, if they're sticking with the pattern here. I'm actually thrilled with what they did in the offseason. I've got no complaints. They have stocked up with a lot of depth. They realized that the offense was sorely lacking last year. They leaned a little too much on the younger guys. Bringing in guys like Pablo Sandoval and Hanley Ramirez, who's, you know, back with the Red Sox after being originally drafted there. In a way, they could be getting the most out of Hanley Ramirez they've gotten out of any player because they traded him originally for Mike Lowell and Josh Beckett in 2007. That helped them win the World Series that year. And if he can be as productive as he looks like he's going to be this year, he could even get them back again. So, you know, there's questions about the pitching staff. They didn't go out and get an ace, but I'm really glad that they took a cautious route. Didn't overpay or overtrade for Cole Hamels, which everyone was talking about, and give up a highly touted prospect like Blake Swihart or Mookie Betts, who looks wonderful. You know, these guys that they have in the pitching rotation, Rick Porcello, I think is a good signing. I think these are guys that may not be great pitchers, but they're good enough. And if the offense is as good as it should be,
And I see that they won't have to be great. You know, the Red Sox will score 6, 7, or 8 runs a game, and they might win a lot of 8-6 games. And I really think, even with questions about the bullpen, I hope Kuji Urahara is going to be okay. This is a team that is built to win, and I think they've learned their lessons from last year. I like what I see.
So, Mitch, we got this email from David who wrote us and said, I want to know if Mitch would please make the same prediction about the Red Sox that he made back in 2013, because that's clearly the path to another World Series win. Was that the year, Mitch, when you said this probably is not a 500 team?
Man, it's 2015. They're still bringing this up, Aaron. They're still
– Oh, man.
It's amazing.
Now I'm nervous to say anything.
Yeah, see, this is what they do to you. Look, everybody, I was not the only one. Kurt Wright can back me up on this. I was not the only one that thought the Red Sox were going to be subpar in 2013. They surprised everybody. So I'll go ahead and say it just for luck's sake. They're not going to be very good this year.
Maybe you were the bulletin board material. That might be what it is. They had your picture in the locker room, and they'd play what you said.
This obscure guy from Vermont,
yeah.
I'm sure, yeah.
That's my story. I'm sticking to it. That's what I would go with.
I love it.
So, Kurt Wright, you're a Yankee fan. Last year was kind of a disappointing year for the Yankees. How are things looking this year?
Well, it was a disappointing year, and particularly what was disappointing for me was the Yankees don't make the playoffs 2 years in a row for the first time in over 20 years, and it just happens to be the year that Rivera retires and Jeter retires. So that was really particularly disappointing. Will they make it 3 years in a row with no playoffs? I think it's very possible. The Yankees, the core four is gone, and they're getting older. They're making attempts to get younger, but we still have – what the Yankee season is going to hinge on, and this is probably for every team, but I think more so for the Yankees than most other teams, is health and comebacks from certain players. The Yankees absolutely must have Tanaka stay healthy for the entire year. He didn't look good in his first start. He had looked good in the spring. They need Pineda, who is looking really, really good, but he hasn't pitched a full season almost at all, period. If he does, though, he has the potential to be a top flight, top of the rotation starter and would give them two excellent starters at the top. Third is CeCe Sabathia needs to have at least somewhat of a comeback year. Maybe not as good as he was 3 or 4 years ago, but he needs to return somewhat to form. I was hopeful, though he lost last night, I was hopeful. He had a rough second inning and then actually rebounded and struck out 8 guys in about 6 innings. If that was to happen, they have top flight 3 starters, and that kind of keeps you in games. They have a great bullpen. Question marks are around Carlos Beltran in right field, Teixeira. They need comebacks from a couple of players, and mostly in the future, and I think they're heading in this direction, they need to get younger.
So as you look at this season with A-Rod on the team, probably being the designated hitter, I suppose, is he an asset for this team or does he turn out to be a liability?
Well, I was not enthused about A-Rod coming back. And I am not a fan of A-Rod, particularly after all that's happened. In terms of the actual baseball, it's gone as good as it possibly could have gone so far, because I thought about the circus that he was going to bring back to the team. He was suing the Yankees, suing baseball, suing everybody last year. He has taken some good advice from somebody and has behaved and said all the right things and has stayed under the radar as he possibly can. And he has showed that he seems to still have something left in the tank in terms of his bat. He hit a home run last night. His bat seems to have some speed left in it. We'll see if he can hold up for the whole year. He turns 40 in the summer. I mean, the biggest thing for me is I would want him to stay quiet, stay out of controversy. Please do not take any steroids. I don't know if we'll know that. And just be quiet and hit.
Aaron, you're a Red Sox fan. Mitch seems pretty optimistic about the team's chances this year. What are your thoughts?
Kind of piggybacking off of what Mitch said, he hit a lot of the strong points that I see. I think that the offense was down last year compared to the year that they won. They went out, they did something about it. Hanley Ramirez especially has shown, you know, that he's brought that in. The pitching staff, I guess, is a bit of a concern, but I mean, it's still early, so there's plenty of time. I mean, how many times have we been surprised as the season develops at who turns out to be, you know, maybe the ace or the steady guy? And sometimes just having a consistent, decent bullpen, or yeah, just stable of pitchers is better than having that one guy that you're always just like, all right, let's just get through these games until his start again. Let's get through these games until his start again. Compared to the Yankees, and like Kurt mentioned, how they have the issues of that they are a lot older and injury prone. I'd rather have a couple of pitchers that haven't, you know, established themselves as much as the Yankees staff, but not have to worry about the injuries, because that right there, I mean, as soon as the Yankees start getting hurt, it's, you know, who knows what's going to happen. And that might be, A-Rod might keep quiet until things start falling apart. And then, you know, he might speak up and share what he thinks should be happening. And that's just a recipe for disaster.
Bob, can I mention what, as a Yankee fan, what I think is a biggest probably plus sign for the Red Sox is Buckholz's first game throwing seven great innings. If he goes back to what he was a couple of years ago, big, big plus for the Red Sox.
Today in the program, it's our annual baseball show. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. When we come back, we're going to look at this effort to bring baseball back to Montreal. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today we have the annual Start of the Baseball Season program. Our guest today, Burlington Representative Kurt Wright, Aaron Cofield, who is sports director at Fox 44 News, and VPR's Mitch Wertlieb. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. If you have some thoughts about baseball, or right now, if you have thoughts about baseball returning to Montreal, this is a great time to call us. That's 1-800-639-2211. Well, it's been just over 10 years since Montreal has had a Major League Baseball team, and there are strong efforts underway to bring a team back to Montreal. And with us now to discuss this possibility is Warren Cromartie, who is part of the Montreal Baseball Project. Warren, welcome to the program.
Hi, good morning, everyone. And yes, president would be more like the Montreal Baseball Project.
All right. And we just let our listeners know that Warren Cromartie was a key part of the history of the Montreal Expos. He played there for nine seasons. In the late 1970s, he was part of a legendary young outfield consisting of Cromartie, Ellis Valentine, and Andre Dawson. During his career with the Expos, he had over 1,000 hits and he batted .281. So, Warren, tell us, how serious is this effort to bring baseball back to Montreal?
Well, it all started, it's real serious. I mean, you hear the news, and I guess you've been hearing all the talk, and the news has been out there. We've been trying to make this happen. I've been on this journey now, going on 4 years, and the first year was a little difficult. First year, nobody wanted to talk about baseball in Montreal, especially that strike and how people felt. And it was a lot of venom, a lot of anger out there since the Expos left 10 years ago. So my whole thing was trying to change the rhetoric, change the tone in Montreal about baseball, because look, we've had baseball in Montreal since 1969, and even before that when Jackie Robinson came to Montreal. So it's not really our first rodeo, so to speak, in regards to baseball. And when I was playing in the 70s at the Olympic Stadium, we had over 2 million people coming to the game. So it was never about the fans. I think it was more about ownership. As far as I'm concerned, the Expos, Montreal Expos, only had one owner, and that's Charles Cross. And all the other guys who came in and tried to do different things and made certain promises even made it worse. So we're in a different path now. We feel good about where we're going. Like I said, it's been 4 years now. I think I've accomplished pretty much what I wanted to. At the beginning, it changed the tone, it changed the talk about baseball. We've had a couple of games at the Olympic Stadium past 2 years and drawn over 96,000 people for two exhibition games. And neither one of the teams are our team. So I don't let the passion know, the people know, and especially Major League Baseball, that the people in Montreal who are very passionate about their sports and throughout northern area there, from Vermont, Ottawa, certain parts of upstate New York, we got fans all over, so we certainly haven't forgotten about the Vermont fans that we have that come in and drive in on weekends, see some of the games, even during the week when they have some time to do that. So, you know, we're right where we want to be. As far as my group is concerned, what we're trying to do, I think right now we just continue what we're doing. And, you know, it's going to take its course. Got to be patient.
Mitch, have you got a question for Warren?
Yeah, Warren, I'm curious. You know, up in Montreal, we all know that the Canadiens are king. I mean, it's a hockey mad city, and the folks there are so into it. Obviously, the Canadiens going to the playoffs now, but I wonder if you're drawing from sort of that same fan base. Do you find that there are some hockey fans who are also baseball fans and would support a team if it came back to Montreal, or is it a different animal altogether?
No, I mean, like I said, we've had baseball since 1969. So I was here when I was playing, Guy Lafleur was playing, Robinson was playing, De La Roche was playing, Gainey was playing. So we understood what the situation with hockey in Montreal. That's a given. But there's room. There's room for baseball in Montreal. And it's shown that over the years since Jackie Robinson played in the minor leagues here with the Dodgers, and when we got our team in 1969 with Rusty Staub and the boys. So, no, I think it's there's 3 million people in Montreal, and outside of that, there's even more. So, I think we can handle our fans. Our fans are very passionate, and of course, we're going to get some hockey fans. We're going to get some all kinds of fans. A sports town, entertainment town.
Warren, Kurt right here. Thrilled to get to talk to you. I saw you play back in the day. So my question for you would be, I would love to get baseball back in Montreal as a person who would be able to get up there in an hour or so. But is the key to this that you need to get a new ballpark in the downtown area? That's what we used to hear. Would the idea be that baseball would come back at the Big O or a new park? And if it's a new park, what has to happen to make that happen? And would the idea be that they would replace maybe the Tampa Rays? That would make sense to me because Tampa has clearly had a great team and just can't draw at all.
Well, I'll answer your first question about a stadium. As you know, Major League Baseball has made a priority of having all of these new stadiums downtown to help redevelop economic life, so to speak, into that city, inject more life and create more jobs and be a part of the downtown scene. As you know, all these new ballparks, PNC Park, Baltimore Camden Yards, San Diego, Cincinnati, and with Minnesota. So that is the theme that we all know about. And yes, I mean, we know it has to be downtown. We're looking at when that time comes, we're not looking at one of these big stadiums. Usually these stadiums are really small, 35,000, 36,000-seat stadium to make this impact. And I really think by bringing the Expos back and putting it downtown, Montreal will be relevant again. I
mean, would you need to put something in front of the voters, a bond or something, to finance the new park?
If you will go to the MontrealBaseballProject.com, we got the feasibility study for you right there as far as what we plan on doing. Privately, I'm not sure if we can – there's an option there, being doing it privately or having some type of government help, fan help, and some private money. Now, there's only two teams in Major League Baseball who are privately funded, St. Louis Cardinals and the San Francisco Giants. Everybody else, all the other teams, have a formula they go by. So we're looking at all formulas for Montreal. We understand the cost that it may incur. I have confidence with my group and their resources that we can make this happen. I mean, we've come a long way. Yeah, I like the position that we are in now, but yes, we do have a plan. We're going to wait now. We just got to get word, and we're not going out there saying what team we want. We have never said that. We let all our allies say that. People in the media, they've done a lot of good talking for us. I mean, it's plain and simple. We understand that certain ball clubs are having a difficult time with attendance and maybe can do something somewhere else. I mean, there's no plans for Major League Baseball as far as expansion anytime soon. And we're familiar with that as well. So we have to look at a bunch of things, look at our options. We've been doing it behind closed doors. And I think the public and the media in Montreal especially has given us that because we've asked for that because I know the impatience as far as fans in Montreal with their passion and all, they want this to happen like yesterday. We all do. But this is a project. This is a big boy. This is not something you put together overnight and something that we had once before that we let go. So we got to make sure that never happens again, and I'll make sure that never happens again. But once the Expos come back the second time, they're never going to leave again. So we have our plate in front of us. Things are developing, and when we have something positive to say or something on the end to say, usually comes from me, and we'll go from there. But we know what's out there. We know the hurdles. I think we've crossed a couple hurdles in a very short time. I can say that, and we may win. I mean, timing is everything in baseball. When you're trying to hit the baseball and when you're trying to put something together like this, with the stipulations behind it and the history behind it. So we're going to do it right, and we're going to have a leadership, a ownership group that everybody can be satisfied and knowing that the Expos is going to be there for a while and trying to build a championship thereafter.
And we have a quick question from Aaron.
Hi, Warren. I just wanted
Hello
to
there.
Ask, how are you? Knowing that we now, I guess, live in a world of instant gratification, how important is it going to be, should a team come back to Montreal, for the fans to understand that it can take a couple of years for them to get back to where they once were and for them to be a winning team? I mean, you look at the Nationals when they went there, they were lousy for the first few years. And now they're finally, you know, 10 years later, they've been in the postseason two of the last 3 years and doing better. But how big will it be for the fans in those first few years to not go, oh, this is just like it used to be, never mind?
Well, I think, thanks for your question, Aaron. And I think it's going to be something that fans are going to have to show up to the ballpark. One, wow, it is great to have our team back. Wow, we haven't been here since 10 years ago and letting everything go in the past because we're starting over. We're grassrooting this whole thing. My whole intentions were at the beginning as far as get the grassroots involved. A lot of these kids are walking around with apparel on today, Expo apparel on. You see it everywhere. The news is spreading out. I mean, we don't even have a team. We're still selling apparel and drawing 96,000 people. So if you come look at it, when you have your own team, of course, you support your own team. You get to know your own team. I don't think no expectation should be put upon the players other than going out and playing your best. And who's ever running the show can put a team together and with a strong minor league system, something that I'm familiar with that I was a part of, with Ellis Valentine, Andre Dawson, Gary Carter, Larry Parrish. Those guys like that came up through our system. We have one of the best minor league systems in the business. All you know, especially all over in the 90s also. Larry Walker, guys of that nature come out of the farm system. So, you know, you come at it looking at entertainment. I think supporting the team any way you can, which we're going to be asking for, I don't think we're going to have a problem with that as far as making noise and how people feel how they play. And I think it's more just coming out, enjoying the game first couple of years, sitting with your friends or your son, who you used to tell things about, stories about Montreal, and reminisce a little bit, but feel compelled to be a part of something.
That sounds like a great experience. And do want our listeners to know that the website for the Montreal Baseball Project is at the VPR website. So if you'd like to learn more about this, take a look at the feasibility study, keep track of what's happening in Montreal, you can check all that out at the VPR website. Warren Cromartie, president of the Montreal Baseball Project, many thanks for being on the program, and please keep us updated on your progress in the future.
Thank you so much for having me. And once again, MontrealBaseballProject.com, NBPR also, MontrealBaseballProject.com. And thanks for the people in Vermont and your radio station. We'll keep you informed because we do have fans in Vermont, and we look forward to this to happen one day. Stay tuned.
Good luck with it.
You're listening to the annual baseball show on Vermont Edition. Our phone number here is 1-800-639-2211. Your thoughts about baseball? Give us a call. 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. It's our annual baseball show. With us today, VPR's Mitch Wertlieb, Aaron Cofield, who is sports director at Fox 44 News, and Burlington representative Kurt Wright. Your thoughts about baseball, 1-800-639-2211. Let's talk to John in Essex Junction. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Hi, Steve. Thanks a lot. I'm a Yankee fan, first of all, I got to tell you that. And I remember going up to see the Montreal Expos and the Yankees when they had interleague play back when they were still up there and seeing amazing crowds up there. And then I'd go up and see Red Sox playing the Expos, and there'd be huge crowds up there, too. I just hope if the Montreal does get another team that it comes into the American League, because I always felt that if the Expos were an American League team, they'd still be playing baseball up there.
Yes.
I mean, just look at the rivalry between the Bruins and the Habs. You know, I'm a Habs fan, too, so I go against the grain here.
But, oh, you do, you know, indeed. Well, it's for me, anyway.
It's great.
Mitch and I were actually just talking about this during the break. I said, I know, you know, Warren's not going to say which teams they're eyeing and that kind of a thing, but how huge would it be for them to land a team or for it to work out where they're able to be in the AL East, so then they can rely on drawing the Boston fans, the New York fans, the Toronto fans, especially in those first few years. I mean, for someone who lives in the Burlington area that's a Red Sox fan, you can go watch your team play, you know, less than 2 hours away versus driving down to Boston and doing that whole thing. I mean, why not?
Yeah,
they would have close to 30 out of their 81 home games would be against the Red Sox, Yankees, and Toronto. Natural rivalries for them, and that's what Bob and I were talking about before what we went on the air too, is get them in the AL East. It would be huge.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's turn and talk about defensive shifts in baseball. We see it more and more, primarily against left-handed hitters. You know, you might look up and all of a sudden you see the third baseman playing very close to second base, and the shortstop and second baseman are way over to the right side of the field. Maybe even one of them is in short right field. The new manager of the Chicago Cubs, Joe Maddon, really developed this practice after looking at detailed charts of where hitters often hit the ball. Maddon famously said, "Why would I put a fielder in a spot that the batter never hits to?" So, Mitch, what about this? You know, we have teams now that have defensive coordinators. They sound like football positions. There's talk about outlawing it, what it does to batting averages. You know, runs scored are down in baseball over the last 10 years or so. What are your thoughts about these defensive shifts?
The shift is not all that new. It really isn't. They were doing this against Ted Williams back in the day. And Ted Williams said, you know, the best way to hit against the shift is to hit over it. They can't get to my ball if I hit it over their heads and into the, you know, for a home run. And, you know, I was reading a comment that George Brett, himself a pretty good hitter, said the other day. He said, look, if these left-handed hitters are frustrated by the shift, hit the ball the other way.
Yeah.
You know, hit it to the opposite field. If the third baseman is playing over, you know, on where the second baseman is, you've got all that room down the third base line. And I know it's frustrating for guys like Big Poppy to try to hit that way, but you can do it. They're professional hitters. That's the way you beat the shift. There should not be a law against the shift. There shouldn't be any rule changes about it. It's a defensive strategy. It's been part of the game for a long time. The hitters have got to adjust. And the best way to beat the shift is to change the way you hit. Throw a bunt down the third base line and get a double out of it. That'll change the shift pretty quick.
Aaron, it sounds like you agree with Mitch.
I do. I think that, especially at that level of baseball, if you're unable to, you know, just develop, you know, work on hitting the other way, and if that's something that really intimidates a Major League Baseball player that badly, well, I don't know, you know, what they're doing on that level. I will say, to me, I mean, it's a defensive strategy. It's no different from if you look at football and a team develops some defense for when they're going to run the ball or when they're going to pass the ball. It's, oh, a lefty came up. This is our best way, we think, to defend this batter and to get the outs and to move on. I don't think that it's something like, how do you ban it? And then where's the gray area?
Right. I mean, like, how far?
Oh, you can only move over 4 feet.
That's like 5 steps too far.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if anything, I was a lefty in high school, and not that I could control. Well, I still am technically, right? Not that I played softball, and not that I could ever control where I was hitting the ball. But I mean, I'd walk up to the plate, and they'd all shift, and I would just laugh because I'm like, I'm lucky if I make contact.
It definitely has had an impact, though. I mean, Mitch is right. It's been around for a long time, but it hasn't been employed to the level that it's being employed now.
That's true.
I'm not, you shouldn't ban it. I'm not suggesting that, but it definitely is having its impact. There are players that are totally, it totally screws them up. Some of these players that are just pull hitters like Brian McCann, I think that impacted him last year. And I think it does Mark Teixeira sometimes. And obviously others like maybe Big Poppy. But hey, Mitch is right. What you got to do is you got to learn to take the ball the other way. If you, particularly if they're using it in a big spot in the game, you know, hit the ball the other way, drop down a bunt, whatever. You got to, I mean, and after a while, maybe they stop doing that. But it definitely is being employed more by far than it ever was.
Let's turn to our listeners again and talk to Harry in South Burlington. Hey, Harry.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Appreciate it. I had a quick question. I'm a hockey player, so I love to watch hockey, but I'm curious to know, like, all the nuances. When I watch baseball, it seems to be such a complex game, and I think that gets overlooked because I guess some people think it's not fast enough, but if you watch the game, I don't know, I'd be curious to see if somebody put, like, an fMRI on someone's brain to see all the different lobes that are being fired up when they're watching, you know, really paying attention to the game. Can you guys talk a little bit about the nuances in the game and you know, how it, in some ways, especially for kids, it's like a brain game.
Yeah, I think Harry's absolutely right about that. I think that there's so much going on in between the pitches, and I understand it looks slow, but there are subtle shifts that are being made all the time. There is a situation when the count changes. If you've got a 3-2 count or a 2-1 count and there's a runner on, you're more likely to see a hit and run or a steal attempt. That changes subtly the way the pitcher approaches his next pitch, the way he approaches the plate. Those times when the catcher comes out and talks to the pitcher, yeah, I understand that can be annoying, but they're talking about those things that Harry just mentioned. They're talking about, listen, I want that ball to, this ball's got to be away because we want the hitter to hit it down the third baseline on this play. You know, we're going to try to pitch it away. All these things are being discussed. It's all going on, and it's complex, but it makes the game so much more interesting and strategic. And as I said before, it's a little bit more of a chess match than a game like hockey, which I love. Also, I think hockey is the most incredibly heart-pounding, fast, furious sport to watch, but baseball's a different animal, and it's in a way that can be more intellectual and more stimulating in a lot of ways if you'll just embrace it and try to study these issues and you know, really get yourself into it when you watch a game.
And there's a great book on this subject. It follows Tony La Russa when he was manager of the St. Louis Cardinals, and it was a weekend series between the Cardinals and the Cubs, and the deal was the reporter could go in and learn all this information, what La Russa was thinking, but he couldn't publish it until after the season was over. So it's 300 pages that cover three games, and just like you're saying, Mitch, as the count moves from 2-2 to 3-2, what is La Russa thinking? And for anyone who's interested in that part of baseball, I definitely recommend it. It's a great read. We're almost out of time, but I've got to put you all on the spot and see who's going to win the pennant in the American League, and I'd like to know who's going to win the World Series. Kurt?
Well, again, the Yankees, if CeCe stays healthy and it goes back to form from a couple years back at least, and if these guys stay healthy tonight, watch the Yankee-Red Sox game. We both have like the 3 and 4 starters going. 25-year-old Eovaldi, if he looks big tonight, the Yankees may have a shot at it. I'll say, just to make it fun, we'll win the East and win it all.
All right.
But that's a long shot.
We got about 30 seconds, Aaron. What do you think?
I will just counter him in this 30 seconds with that the Red Sox will win the East and the Red Sox will win all. And Wade Miley, I've got a little soft spot for the Louisiana boys. He's going to handle your Yankees tonight.
Yeah, or we could be last.
And Mitch, what do you think?
There in Louisiana. She knows Wade Miley, so I trust her on that. You know, I'm only saying this. I don't want to jinx it because I am a superstitious guy and baseball is a superstitious game. But I am going to say it. I think the Red Sox are going to win the East. I think they're going to win the pennant. I think they're going to have it's going to be a toss-up when they play the Washington Nationals in the World Series. But let's go worst to first of first again. Red Sox win it all.
I love it. Mitch just jinxed the Sox.
Nerds, I knew it.
Nationals is a solid pick, too, though. That would have been my second.
That's our baseball show for today. Many thanks to our panel, Aaron Cofield, Kurt Wright, Mitch Wortley. Many thanks for being on the program.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
That is Vermont Edition for today. Monday, the birds are back in town. The sounds of robins, warblers, and geese, among others, have become evident over the last few weeks as the spring bird migration has begun. Bird diva Bridget Butler joins us to help identify the birds that will soon be visiting your feeder. Send your questions for Bridget to VermontEdition@vpr.net and listen Monday at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Patty Daniels, Rick Sungari, and Sam Gale Rosen, with production assistance from Amanda Shepherd. Mary Williams directed the program. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.